I'm Gab. He's Don. Jewel still on his well-earned holiday. It is crummy and rainy in West London.
Terrible.
But hey, as you can probably tell from the fact that I'm still wet from having trudged through the rain. What a weekend. Happy
Amazing.
Easter to everybody who celebrates it. Liverpool and Arsenal, I thought one of the most entertaining games
Definitely.
I've seen in a while in the Premier League. We'll talk about that. So much else going on. Bayern winning. Juventus losing to Lazio. Real Madrid losing at home to Villarreal.
Chukwueze show.
The Chukwueze show. Very much so. And we have a big week of Champions League coming up. We have to start at Anfield because this is pretty remarkable. The backstory, Don.
Hello.
Is obviously City winning the day before.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have this thing when you play the day before.
City are coming.
Exactly. The wheel's turning a little bit. But it's okay. Arsenal go out there. They take a 2-0 lead.
Yeah.
I thought they could have even scored a third. Gabriel Jesus at the far post. And then Liverpool in the second half come back. Or they score before
proper
halftime.
Proper Liverpool.
That we see proper Liverpool in the second half.
Yes.
He doesn't. They miss a penalty. At the end, absolute chaos, chances left, right, and center.
Anyone could have won it.
Anybody could have won it at the end. Ramsdale coming up big.
Yeah.
Some tremendous individual performances.
Yeah.
But I want to start with this. In the popular narrative, there is a moment, and maybe it's because people don't like Granit Xhaka. I need to ask you this, right?
Yeah.
People here in England made such a big deal of the fact that there's an incident when the score's still 2-0, I believe, where Granit Xhaka clashes with Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Yeah.
You know, they go face-to-face. And people say, there's the momentum. This lifts the Anfield crowd. Now, you played for Liverpool. You played at Anfield as an opponent.
Yeah.
Is this a thing?
See, at the weekend, it wasn't
a thing.
Was
this a thing?
At the weekend, it wasn't a thing. Last season, it was a thing when Arteta had the massive row with Jurgen Klopp and the stadium got lifted and the energy was completely different. It was a toxic atmosphere in Liverpool's favour. I think people are digging a little bit too deep in the Granit Xhaka trend thing. I think it was the goal just before half-time. That's what gave Liverpool hope. I looked at that and I think that's a routine incident, nothing much to see. I don't think that's what set the Liverpool fans alight. I think it was boiling, and then the goal, it gave Liverpool great hope. And Jurgen Klopp would have delivered that team talk at half-time. He would have said the last 15 minutes of the first half, that was the proper Liverpool. Do that in the first 15, second half. And then the second half, looking at the game, anyone could have won it, anyone could have lost it. I would imagine Jurgen Klopp and his staff would have said to the players, that's the benchmark. That's the standards we've been setting the second 45 5 years.
What you're telling me is, as a player, you're more influenced by your sensation of how the game is going and what your manager tells
you.
And the goal
huge.
Before halftime.
Yeah.
More so than the crowd roaring because
Definitely.
Granit Xhaka. And it's just us in the media who love a good narrative and say, oh, look, silly Xhaka again.
It would have got a little spike in terms of the atmosphere, but the goal done it. Because Arsenal going in at 2-0 is a completely different scoreline. You know, Arteta delivers a different team talk. He would have been a positive one, sensational. We can score more goals, make sure you're tight at the back. When you go in at 2-1... he would have been preparing his team for an onslaught the second half. Liverpool kicking towards the top end. So his team talk, I'm not saying it would have been a negative one, but he would have prepped his side for the onslaught that was coming. And then it came.
If you're Arteta, do you see this in the end, given the way things shaped up at the end as a point gained?
Definitely. I heard people say 2 points dropped. And maybe in the context because you're winning 2-0 and you end up drawing 2-2. But I don't agree with that. I think it's just because City are on the charge. I think we know we can probably could predict City might win every single game from now at the end of the season. They have done, you know, last year. I remember seeing a graphic last year and it was Liverpool 12 to play, Man City 12 to play. How many are they going to lose? They didn't lose any. Both teams didn't lose any with 12 to go. That's how good City can be. So I think in the context when Mikel Arteta called it a jungle the day before in terms of the atmosphere, I think coming away from a point, I think it's well-deserved.
All right, just before halftime, we saw, or at halftime as they're walking off the pitch, we saw this bizarre incident. I had not seen this before, and I've watched football for many years, as have you. Konstantin Hatzidakis, that's the name of the assistant referee. Andy Robertson comes over to remonstrate with him.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like as he's turning away from him, he appears to elbow him, certainly in the face. Robertson.
Elbow or a fob?
You can call it a fob, an elbow. Robertson very angry, saying he hit me in the face. He hit me in the face. And there's calls. Oh, should he get banned for how long?
Yeah.
This is weird.
It's weird. It's difficult. Your eyes are telling you so many things. You're trying to answer a question. Did Andy Robertson put a hand on the official? I didn't see that. I must admit, but I stand corrected if I'm wrong.
You can't really tell from the pictures. When they blow them up, everything becomes pixelated.
That's what I'm saying. I would imagine for sure Andy Robertson would have given him a bit of verbals, for sure, because why else would you go there? So you've gone over the referee. I think what I saw is the linesman fobbing him off. But when you fob someone off, you can fob someone off in a manner. But the elbow was sort of quite...
It does. He's also bigger than Robertson, which I think plays into it too. We're going to analyze this a little bit more. Right now, I have a lot of sympathies for referees and officials in general. I have no problem, and I think sometimes... Like, I hate it when people say, oh, they have such a tough job. How can you criticize them? Oh, why don't you go be a referee? That's stupid, right? Yeah, yeah. They're professionals. Yeah. I want to treat them as such.
They're the authority.
Exactly. Equally, I think, you know... These are professional players as well.
Yeah.
I know that you're only human, and I can imagine remonstrating immediately after an incident.
Mm-hmm.
But the whistle's gone for halftime.
Yeah.
So if you chase a linesman to go and chat with him,
yeah,
it tells me that you're a little bit out of control, because you're not going to... Are you trying to influence him for the second half? Like, it's kind of, what are you doing?
The scenario was weird, because if the linesman was quite close to Andy Robertson and the whistle went, and say he was on his side and he's this distance apart, that's a normal conversation to have. It's a normal bit of sort of verbal aggression you can get out of your system. But it was the fact that he walked, whatever it was, 20, 25 yards. He's got a lot of time, Andy Robertson, to think about what he's saying and what he's going to say and what he's doing. So there's the problem. We've got to start respecting the referees and the officials now.
I mean, I would assume maybe it had something to do with something that happened earlier in the game that Robertson wasn't happy with.
Yeah, there was a tackle, I think, went on, I think, between himself and an Arsenal player that I think he might have felt it was a foul or whatever. But still, it was the fact that he had the distance to walk and think about his actions. That's where it could have been stopped. And then the linesman's probably anticipating what Andy Robertson's going to say or do. Then the whole situation's just got flared.
All right. It seems to me there's two elements to this. One is, did Andy Robertson put his hands on him?
Don't know.
I think it's interesting that in this age of, like, you know, 4K HD TV, a billion cameras, I don't think we can definitively say one way or the other, because certainly not looking at the pictures, because
But even if he did, there's a way. And
there's a way to free yourself from it, right?
No. If you're Andy Robertson, I mean, I know you shouldn't put hands on the officials, but if you sort of tap...
Yeah, there's a way to do it aggressively, and there's a way not to do it.
Exactly.
Was he aggressive?
Mitrovic, aggressive. Bruno Fernandes, baby.
Was Robertson aggressive in your view?
I don't know what he said.
It's the hands. It's what he was saying.
Yes, I don't think it's the hand that was being aggressive. I don't even know if there was a touch. So if I don't know there's a touch... And I am a very honest guy in what I see. I would say, he's pulled him back and the referee deserved to fob him off.
Right.
But I don't know if there was a touch. If there was a touch, it would have been slight. But I think it was more the verbals that Andy Robertson was just about to give the referee, the linesman, in his little bit of personal space. Then I think the referee, referee's assistant, he then, I think, gives
assistant
him the...
Assistant referee?
Yes, gives him the sort of fob. It was just an ugly incident that I think stems from and starts from the players. If Andy Robertson doesn't go there...
I think you also have to be aware that Robertson is little. This guy is... not that he's a giant, but he's substantially taller.
He's buffed.
And, he looks like...
I've got a bit of body envy.
He looks like he spends his mornings in the gym.
Yeah, that's envy.
You have to be aware that if you turn and you raise... You even want to get away from him, you know. Do it with an open fist lower down so you get him in the chest and just kind of push him back. You know, there are better ways to do it than doing it the way he did it.
I don't know what the conclusion is.
He's an experienced guy.
I don't know what the conclusion is, because we're making up numbers. And I heard a referee this morning say, well, it should be the same as Mitrovic. Be an eight-game ban.
Sorry, which referee did you hear this?
Mark Halsey.
Oh, come on. Seriously?
Ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Honestly, some of these people...
You can't reference that and put them in the same just because hands are on an official. You can't reference and say it's exactly the same punishment.
Yeah, look, we hold referees to a higher standard, but... to me, it seemed entirely inadvertent. And we got to see. We have to hear Robertson's version of events, and we have to hear this guy's version of events. I think
looking from the outside, judging what I saw, I think you stand the assistant referee down for one or two games max, and you move on.
I think that's reasonable. What would change it is if something emerges after they presumably they'll have to give witness statements about what happened.
But put something out to the players. Put something out to the clubs. Stop touching and stop harassing officials.
I still want to hear what was said.
Yeah.
From both parties, their version of events, and then you make a call based on that. But I agree with you. It can't be this automatic thing. No. Well, this guy got 8 games, DiCanio got 11 games, whatever, and so the referee needs to get. I mean, this is just silly. Let's go back to the game, because especially the end of the match, the reason I think part of the reason we love this game is it was just so exciting. I mean, as a neutral, things went back and forth. Mm. Liverpool totally in the ascendancy at the end, and in a minute I'm going to ask you what Arsenal could have done differently.
Yeah.
But just to describe this, we had that ridiculous Ramsdale save where I'm watching on television. When I see the shot go, at first I think it's going to go out. Mm. And then I see it's curving.
Bending back in.
It's bending back, even after taking the deflection.
Yeah.
And I think to myself, Ramsdale thought it was going out.
Mm.
He's missed a split second. And I told myself, he's not getting to this.
Yeah.
He is not getting to this ball. And he does. He goes out. O monstro. and he gets to the ball.
Yeah. Do you know, you see some keepers pull off saves for the cameras. We call them camera saves. Just to make it look good, because you know it's a camera save. That weren't. That was full stretch. It was... wasn't even the palm of the hand. It was the fingertips. So it tells you the agility of Ramsdale. It tells you the biomechanics of it, seeing Salah's shot originally, then changing the mind, because then you've got to take into fact the deflection off Gabriel. You've got to adjust your stride, adjust your jump, go full stretch, right-handed fingertip save as it's gone in the top corner, cop end. Incredible save.
It was incredible. He made some other ones too, the one off of Darwin Nunez. At the very, very end, this other sort of incredible situation happens where there's the ball in the box and Konate on the goal line. It's weird to me because the question is,
I know exactly what he's thinking.
You don't know what body part to go with, right?
Anyone else does. He doesn't then, because you've got two options. It's a right foot tap in or a diving header. That's your two options.
And you think he got stuck without knowing?
He got stuck without knowing. And then what he's thinking there, he's thinking, right, what's my biggest body part? What can I get the best connection?
A chest.
Chest. So he's thinking chest from 2 yards. I've got to score. But then Ramsdale comes across and gets in his way.
Does he also go chest because he's kind of...
Centre forward would never go chest. Midfield player would never go chest. Ever. If you had a Rolodex of options... You go right foot finish, diving header, you go through all the options. The last thing you would ever turn to as a striker or a midfield player is the chest.
I'm assuming he didn't go right foot. He didn't go side foot.
He's thinking biggest body part. He's thinking connection.
But the reason for that is because where he is, he's moving, he's kind of half in the air, he's in an uncoordinated
position.
And
how many times in his career would Konate have been in that situation? Once?
No, probably not often. But what I'm saying is I don't think he can sort his feet out confidently enough.
So therefore you
that he can get the side foot
in
a way because he'll look stupid, then he balloons it or whatever.
Fine. So if that's correct, then
I don't think he felt he had the right momentum to turn his body to the header.
If you can go for chest, you can go for head. So if your body's going down to chest it, you can head.
His head is smaller than his chest.
Maybe. No, I know.
And that brings you back to your...
But no, I'm talking what a centre forward would do, because muscle memory and everything about what you've done in your whole lifetime is right foot finish, but then if you can't sort your feet, then you go Rolodex, you go diving header.
Right.
He's panicked and gone, biggest part of my body, chest. Let's just hit the target. From there, I score. And he doesn't.
Almost immediately afterwards, there's this Arsenal counterattack. Where Martinelli, and this is not a knock on Martinelli, who I thought was exceptional in the game. It's a 3-on-2. Now, the Italian in me says, wait a minute. First of all, I have to say this. You're Liverpool. If you draw this game 2-2, I mean, I know you're chasing top four and everything, but given the way you played earlier, given the way you finished this game, you can't get 0 points at home and throw this game away. How do you get caught, first of all?
They're caught in the emotion, Liverpool. Liverpool are caught in the emotion of winning the game.
You need to play with control.
Not in the last minute of the game, not at Anfield. Never played with any control against Barcelona. That was pure emotion.
Well, when they were 3-0 down. Yeah, I got that.
No, the second leg, when they'd done them at Anfield. There was no control about Liverpool's play. It was chaos. It was emotion. That's what got them over the line. That's what got them the win. So they're going towards the cop end, and they're thinking emotion. We've got them. We've had them on the rack for 40 minutes.
That bugged me on the counter. You give up a goal like that, it kills you. It kills you emotionally.
Well, it would have happened.
Right, but that's what should have happened. But then
Darwin Nunez could have scored and Canate could have scored.
That's fine, but this is the very end. I mean, to me, the Martinelli pass, that was totally Liverpool getting out of jail.
I don't think, going back to your point, if Liverpool had got 0 points or 1 point, that helps them towards top four. It was the 3 points that was going to get them to top four. So they had to go all in for the win. If Liverpool lose that game in that scenario 3-2, they're not going to get top four. If Liverpool draw 2-2 like they did, they ain't going to get top four. So three had to be the number.
Yeah, no, that I think that's a fair point mathematically. I just think emotionally, to concede a goal like that.
Oh, it would have been devastating. It would have been crushing.
I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just being too conservative here. Martinelli, as it happens, man's been running like a maniac.
Yeah.
In the end, is the pass more difficult than I think? If you're hitting it in the last minute of the game where everybody's sprinting, you're hitting the pass on the move. Because it's easy. You said, we were talking before, right? It's easy to us. We're sitting in front of the cameras, in front of the screens, like, oh, this is easy.
Yeah,
right?
You've got a cup of tea, you've got a little bit of a biscuit in front of you. Oh, this is easy, that little pass.
Is it more difficult, actually, than... Because you've been there.
Yeah, do you know what it is, Gab? If you fast forward 5 years of Martinelli's career, he makes that pass 9 times out of 10. It's a young player in the moment, and his options are... I'm pretty sure it was Bukayo Saka, the player that he was trying to find. Your options are, I'm going to play it 1 yard in front of him so he doesn't have to take a touch and he can run onto it. In hindsight, he should have played it to his feet. He should have played it to Saka's feet, and then Saka can take it in his stride and finish it. The fact that he tried to play it 1 yard in front of him, he overhit it by a couple. And that's when Alisson come off his line and just about done enough to get rid. So it's a rookie mistake from a young player, but I wouldn't beat him up because experience tells me he'll make the right choice in a few years' time.
You think it was a choice that he made rather than mishitting it?
I wasn't a miss it, yeah. See, what you've got to try and think of, and listen, a really, really funny story. I've got a guy who I talk with over in Ireland, and we play sort of vets football, and I'm in his phone as Einstein. So whenever I call him, Einstein pops up on his phone. It's a running joke. Because we had a few beers, shall we say, till about 4 a.m. And I was trying to explain to him, which is really difficult to try and explain. And if I'm a midfield player, and let's just say I'm playing with Darwin Nunez, and I get the ball in midfield, I've got all the biomechanics of what I see. So my brain's telling me, Darwin Nunez is in. My eyes see it. It goes down to my body, down to my core, down to my right foot. Then I've got to judge the 32.5-yard pass into Darwin Nunez. And by the way, he's running at 17.5 miles an hour. And I've got to put that on a dime, right? It's impossible to explain. And footballers never know how they do it. So you just do it on reflexes, you do it on instinct, and you do it through experience.
Well, it's interesting here because you
touched on that. So the Einstein bit, how do footballers do that mathematics? How do I do a 32.5-yard pass?
It's not the guy that's running at 17.5 that does that.
Yeah, but we can't do the maths.
No.
In our brain, but somehow we do because we find the passes.
Well, and that's really interesting. And I think the difference is what you lose is the ability to do it, not the decision. So if you play now, you can probably see things when you say this is the right decision.
Because experience.
I don't know if I can do it because I retired 10 years ago.
Yeah, but all of it comes into the equation. So what you would say to Martinelli, next time you play that pass, if you're in that same scenario, you can't overhit the pass.
Right. So he's got more data in his brain.
Because it brings Alisson into the game. What you can do is you can slightly underhit the pass. Because if you underhit the pass, it's still going to get to Saka.
All right. Couple more things, just on Arsenal. Is Arteta sitting there kicking himself, saying I could have done something differently in the second half?
No, I don't think so, Gab. I think it was the emotion. I think it was the wave. I think everything that he saw coming when he called Anfield a jungle, and there's a reason why Arsenal haven't won there in a long time. It's a reason why I think take COVID out the scenario for Liverpool. They're unbeaten, not unbeaten, but they've lost like one or two games in about 5 years at Anfield. I stand by. I think it's the hardest place to go and get a win, Anfield.
And that's why you said Arsenal got a point at Anfield. And this is a point one rather than 2 points lost.
Yes, I think so, yes. Because it's still in Arsenal hands now, the title. It's in City's and it's in Arsenal's.
Yeah, 6 points. 6 points, City have a game in hand, and there's the head-to-head.
Yeah.
I think that's what it boils
down to. So the narrative, everyone's going, oh, it's back in City's hands. It's not. It's in Arsenal's hands as well.
50-50. Well, with the difference that Arsenal can take a draw in the head-to-head.
That's what I mean.
City can't.
That's
so
what I mean.
If you go percentages, you might even be say it's a little more Arsenal's way. Mosa, I answered two things which could be concerns from two guys who've been some of Liverpool's greatest performance in recent years. Salah obviously scores.
Yeah.
And then he misses a penalty. He also took it in a way, his body was angled in such a way that, like, unless he decides to shock everybody and take it with his other foot.
Yeah.
Like,
there's only one place with the angle he was putting that. I think Bournemouth come into his head when he missed one a week or two earlier.
Is this a concern? Is this a thing?
It's a concern. It's a thing. And then someone said to me yesterday, would you take him off pens? Absolutely not. Because you've got to get back on the horse at some point.
Right.
You know, leave him on pens. He'll score the next one. I think probably what happened was there, again, in the footballer's psyche, he's thinking Bournemouth. He's thinking, I skied it. I missed it. What I need to do now against Ramsdale is I need to be really precise. And he was trying to be too precise into that bottom left-hand corner.
Now, I asked you about defending. We had a whole conversation off-air about Ben White on
Roberto
Firmino.
Nearly come to blows, I think. We were close.
We disagree on that one. leave it at that. We can't get into
it. No, let's have it.
For time restrictions. But I want to ask you about Virgil van Dijk.
Yes.
Because, obviously, certainly his screw-up on the first goal.
I think both goals.
Is this a concern?
Massive. I think there's a reason why Liverpool have been linked with Evan Ndika at Eintracht, who's on a free transfer, who's a really good centre-back. I thought Konate was a monster. I thought he was amazing yesterday. I thought easily for Liverpool was man of the match. But Van Dijk was guilty. Trent got pulled out of position for the first goal, and they sort of swapped over Konate and Trent. But that's not the end of the world. That can happen. But everything that you've been
taught...
What
are you seeing with Van Dijk?
Well, he doesn't spot Gabriel. Jesus, he doesn't spot him. You know, in on a basic level, when you see the cross come in the box, your first thought is, right, I'm in a position, I need to get touch tight. Because if he's touch tight on Jesus, Jesus might still win the header, but then he can't get the power in Yaku, so you're putting him off because of the bodily contact. The fact that he's ball watching for an experienced international defender.
So you're seeing mental errors here. You're not seeing physical, you're not seeing Van Dijk.
Physically, I always
whatever.
Think he can do more. Because I think he plays the game at his own speed, and he's very casual. So
right.
Physically, I think you can.
But
do
that's
more.
Never been an issue before.
Never before.
Right.
Maybe.
So you're seeing mental mistakes.
Maybe after the ACL, maybe he needs a summer off and maybe he needs to reset.
Right.
But the basic level of defending to spot Jesus, honestly, Gab, that's under 15, 16 stuff.
Right.
You get the flight of the ball. Space has never scored a goal. So don't stand in space. Go and get touch tight on Jesus, and Jesus cannot score. And then he wiped Jesus out on the far touchline and got a yellow card because his head's come off. Total frustration. So I think Jurgen Klopp's got to have the conversation, I think, with Van Dijk in the summer. He's got to look in his eyes and he's got to say to him, are you up for this next season? Because if you're not, I'll bring in competition.
So the other thing which struck me was, we talked about how good Liverpool were after the break and sort of really after Salah's goal to make it 2-1. He didn't actually make any changes until the hour mark.
Mm.
And interestingly, he started Curtis Jones,
yep.
who's obviously been up and down for kind of like the last 2 years, and Diogo Jota sort of...
But he loves his attitude.
Well,
Klopp loves his attitude.
I like the idea, play Salah and Gakpo maybe, you know, a little closer together, Jota a little in behind. That's fine. But then when he makes the changes, the guys who come on are Thiago and Darwin Nunez.
Yeah.
If you said to me in the summer that in a key game at Arsenal, these two guys would be coming off the bench.
Mm. Well, fitness plays a part. And I read a report that Darwin Nunez has looked a little bit off in terms of being in the red zone and not as sharp as he should be. I thought Klopp should have started with him because I looked at Ben White and I thought Darwin Nunez, Ben White, he could
run. Well, it's also when they got a guy who's keeping him out of the lineup is Cody Gakpo.
Yeah, but
it's not like...
Yeah, but Gakpo played through the middle. Sorry, Firmino played through the middle and they were interchanging with
I'm talking about Nunez now.
Yeah.
I'm saying, so the choice is Nunez or Gakpo. So the choice is to play Nunez and Salah or you play Salah and Gakpo.
But
right?
I understood the changes.
Because
Liverpool were... I'm asking.
Thiago and Nunez do not start this game.
Yes, but they've not been here.
Do you think it's purely down to
fitness?
Well,
Thiago's first game
back.
You
can only give him a half hour.
Well, yeah, can you start Thiago against Arsenal from minute one when he's been out for a month and a half? No chance.
Does he have 45 minutes?
Well, he did.
Well, he came on. He came half an hour. Right?
Yeah.
You know, I get that point. It was interesting to me though that when I cycle back to when
if everyone's fit, everyone's fully fit, Darwin Núñez starts and Thiago starts. But the context is they haven't been fit. Right.
And this brings me to the point I was trying to make is Thiago arrived. It wasn't an enormous fee. I think it was 20-odd million, right? Mm. It was a big contract, older player, horrendous fitness record.
Yeah.
And I was always on the fence about, did this make sense? Did you get him only for certain games? And for me, the jury is still out.
I think that's fair. I think we're not judging Thiago on his level of ability. Guy's absolutely world class.
It's his ability to stay, to be available.
And to shut down. Because we're comparing, I think when you look at the job that Gini Wijnaldum done, who is a very, very underrated player in terms of everything, goal scoring, energy, you know, close people down, set the tone. That's not Thiago's game. So they're two completely different players.
I think the mindset at the time was, look, we'll be against 80% of teams, we don't need Thiago. So even if he has had these injury issues when we sign him, and we know when he's older, he's going to cost us a lot of money, that's fine. We need him for those big games against, you know, Manchester City, Chelsea at the time, Bayern, Champions, whoever we play, right?
Yeah.
Those are the big ones that we need him for, where he gives us that ability to unlock teams that sit and park the bus. But I think it's interesting that you invest so much into somebody in spot duty, and it almost worked. I mean, you could argue it has worked, right? They reached Champions League finals. They won the league. But
when they signed him, I thought, what a player. And I still think, what a player. But he can't shut down like Gini Wijnaldum, and he can't shut down like prime Fabinho and Henderson. It's not his game. He's a controller. And when Liverpool, over the last 5 years, have been playing, he's only been there, what, 2 or 3 years, every team, more or less, in the Premier League, apart from one or two, have always sat off Liverpool. That's when he comes into his game. It's not when teams are counter-pressing him and running off the back of him, because he's slow. I was a slow player, but Thiago is incredibly slow. But what he does with his pitcher and his passing, he should be opening teams up left, right and centre.
Yeah, and in the end, when he opens teams up, obviously that's a goal. It's a low-scoring game. I guess it makes sense. I don't know. To me, he remains one of the more interesting signings that Liverpool have made in recent years.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, enough Liverpool. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's do it.
Manchester City stomp all over Southampton 4-1 as Erling Haaland scores twice before coming off ahead of the midweek clash with Bayern because he needs his beauty sleep. Don, this guy's pretty good.
Yeah, and everyone said he was the problem 2 months ago. Ah, he's the problem. Doesn't link up the play, doesn't do this, only has 12 touches.
This problem bugs me. Something that you say this is a problem is he makes City play in a different way.
He scores 44 goals in 38 games gap. Scores goals that no one can score in world football. A guy's a genius.
Do you know what's funny? Did you hear Pep after the game when he started comparing his goal-scoring record to Cristiano and Messi?
Messi, yeah.
And I thought to myself, wait, people never do this, right? You never compare a young player to a GOAT. You don't want to put the pressure on him.
But did you see, though, after the game when he took his Alice band off, Erling Haaland, and it was in slow motion, he sort of dragged his hair and he's just like, beautiful. Because he's just this like Viking warrior that's going to score a million goals a season. That's why he's saying a young kid getting these numbers is Messi Ronaldo like 44 so far.
I'll tell you what, his numbers through, I think he's played 204 games in his career as a senior pro, right?
Yeah.
In that time period, the numbers will be in my column, but he has scored far more than Messi did through his first 204 games.
Boom.
And far more than Cristiano did. What people forget is Cristiano became absurdly prolific. In fact, both these guys became absurdly prolific later. Now, I know before the Cristiano and Messi fans team up to attack me.
Oh, you hater.
I know it's different.
This guy
played at Salzburg, and he played in Austria, and he played in Norway.
Don't care. The other guys
played in the Premier League and La Liga. That's fine. I'm not disputing that. But I just never thought we'd be comparing somebody to those guys so soon, even while they're still playing.
Gab, I never thought, off the back of Ronaldo and Messi's career, I can remember saying a million times, no one on earth will get anywhere near their numbers. No one. And then Haaland comes along.
It's early. It's early.
Some early. Real Madrid let the lead slip, Gab, against Villarreal. It was the Chuck Wasey show. What a player.
Yeah, he scored twice. He set up another one for El Comandante Morales. Okay, if I'm Real Madrid, I am not overly concerned. You made some changes looking into the Champions League. I got a 2-1 up. Vinicius looked really, really good.
Was that weird, though, the changes that he made but still played Vinny Jr. and Benzema? I mean, those two are the ones I'd protect.
Yeah, I think he wanted maybe to give him minutes. They had a chance to go 3-1 up. And in the end, the Chukwueze, the winner. I mean, that's just a screamer. You're not gonna stop that. So I'm okay with it if you're Real Madrid. I think mentally they're thinking, all right, let's win the Copa del Rey and let's win the Champions League and let's have a nice long summer.
Yeah.
Done. There were ugly afters in that Madrid game. Federico Valverde clashed with Alex Baena during the match and later confronted him near the team bus, punched him in the face, reportedly. Villarreal and Baena have filed a police report. This is ugly.
It's very ugly. And the comments that the player made about Valverde's son, allegedly. I don't blame Valverde for punching him in the face. I don't. If I'm a young player, if that level of abuse...
But he made the comments before, though, when they played last time.
Yeah, but still, I mean, what a thing to say, Gab. I mean, people can,
can Google them.
Can Google them and read exactly what he said about his newborn child. I'm not surprised that a young player like Valverde or an experienced player, there's a line I think you don't cross.
Baena denies making those comments. What I would caution Real Madrid against is if you can see Valverde is upset, and this is what I don't understand, it was near the buses and stuff, you need to have people on top of him. You need to have people near him to make sure that he goes nowhere near the other bus.
I'd agree with that.
And he doesn't make something, because if the police get involved and you find the wrong sort of people, this could turn very, very serious very quickly.
I agree, but I think from a footballer's standpoint, I think there's a line you don't cross. And I think he crossed it if he said the words that he said. So PSG beat Nice 2-0 to keep their 6-point lead at the top of the table, Gab. But this was not straightforward.
So first of all, congrats on the 3 points. This was really important because Lens won on Friday night. And seriously, we can joke about this. Ha ha ha, Farmers League, all these Muppets joking about it. But they're nearly throwing this away. If they had lost this game, next week they play Lens. And then after that game, they could be level on points, right? Mm. This is how, which just seems unthinkable, right?
Yeah.
They went ahead with Lionel Messi, and then they were rubbish again. And then it was all down to individuals. And Nice hit the woodwork twice. Gigi Donnarumma had to make...
did that not go in when it hit the crossbar post and was like, my eyes still tell me it was over the line.
It is. Goal line technology disagreed. And Sergio Ramos scored a late one. Man, this season cannot end quickly enough for Paris Saint-Germain. That's all I can say. And I'm sure Jules would agree with me. Lazio beat Juventus 2-1 to strengthen their hold on second place, at least until we hear from the appeals court on April 19th. Don, you watched him. What did you make of this version of Sarri ball?
Sarri ball in effect. Oh, God, they were amazing. I've not seen Lazio play this well for years.
That's a pretty good performance this season.
I mean, in terms of the consistency and how they've been playing. I mean, I've watched Philippe Anderson a million times when he's played for Lazio and same at West Ham. The guy was just disinterested when he didn't have the ball. Sarri's got him working back. He's got him tracking. He plays as a false nine when Immobile's not playing. Pedro's really fit at his age 35. The midfield players like Cataldi keep hold of the ball. There's people like Kevin De Bruyne who are amazing, but is there a better midfield player out there in Europe than Milinkovic-Savic?
Luis Alberto might have something to say about that.
Well, exactly. But in terms of how they play, I mean, it's amazing.
It's so much fun to watch.
It was great. It was a fantastic.
Is there something nice about Juve's second half? Crank it back into it?
Well, we'll get into some contentious decisions about them. But I mean, yeah, there was loads of decisions in that game. I'll keep it to just two. Should Sergei Milinkovic-Savic's goal have struck off for a push on Alexandro? And should Manuel Locatelli have been sent off for his tackle on Milinkovic-Savic?
So I'm glad the goal stood. I think the goal should have stood.
Yeah.
He does push him. I don't think it's a particularly powerful or violent push. It looks like a kind of push for distance.
So you think he pushed him, but the goal should stand?
He put his hand in his back. We can see that clearly,
that
right?
That was my trouble on commentary on the game.
Well, but equally, if you're Alexandro, he jumps into the air, throws his arms into the air. Like, what, you want to make sure the referee sees you?
That's exactly what he's doing.
It's fine. Maybe next time, put a body in Milinkovic-Savic and don't concede the goal.
True.
Right? Don't gamble on the referee and the VAR.
True.
To go. I mean, certainly yeah. they communicated. There was a silent check. If they'd sent him to the screen, would he have come up with a different decision? I don't know. But
my only problem,
I have no issue with it.
Yeah, no.
This is a physical game.
My only problem.
And I don't like players who do well.
No, I get it. My only problem trying to call the game was this was a pundit's nightmare. I think this is a referee and VAR nightmare, as in you can't win in this scenario because you're trying to judge the contact and we can all second guess what we thought went on, but there's only two players and the whole planet that knows how much contact there was, Milinkovic-Savic and Alexandro.
Well, I think they know the contact.
Only the two players.
The strength of the contact, yeah.
Which we don't know.
And the other one, the Locatelli one.
Horrendous. Horrendous tackle.
I don't think it was malicious.
Oh, Gab, it was a leg breaker.
It certainly turned out that way because it slides over the top of the ball.
I've done them. I've done them tackles. Horrendous tackle.
I don't know what Milinkovic-Savic is made of that he was fine.
He limped off and he was pulled his shin pad down as he limped off at half-time. And in my humble opinion, he was a lucky man that he didn't get seriously injured.
Manchester United overcome your old club Everton, one of your old clubs, Everton 2-0, though they're stressing over Marcus Rashford's condition after he limped off. Don, I thought United fully deserved this.
Massive. I thought they were brilliant. I thought first 45 minutes, I thought they could have been 5 up. I thought Everton under Sean Dyche at Old Trafford, wouldn't say bottled it, but I thought the game plan was awful because Godfrey got done over the top from Anthony about 5 times and Pickford had to be on his game to keep it down to 1, and then obviously they got the second. But the story is Rashford, isn't it? Because when you watch Man United, he's the only one that scores the goals for them.
Well,
he's the only one with a level of goal-scoring ability. Martial, I don't think we're ever going to be convinced. Vecord's not going to hit the numbers that Rashford's got, so they'll be sweating this morning.
Shout out to Bruno for playing deeper, and I thought playing very, very well
That
deeper role.
Yeah, but that's the story. They've got to get him fit. Matthias De Ligt scored a wonder goal that gives Bayern a 1-0 victory over Freiburg, Gab, but a bit of revenge for getting knocked out of the German Cup.
Bit of revenge, more importantly, 3 points, which is obviously what they need to stay ahead of Borussia Dortmund. I don't think this was a great performance from Bayern, but they did give it their all. They showed that they were mentally tough. We saw, by the way, Musiala and Müller together, but that means you sacrifice a central midfielder. Kimmich back there on his own. It was fine against Freiburg, who parked the bus. But you also realize you can take a million shots without a center forward, without Mane and Gnabry performing, you're going to have trouble creating clear-cut chances. Tottenham beat Brighton 2-1 thanks to a late Harry Kane goal, which means they remain 3 points outside the Champions League spots. But Don, Brighton are furious with VAR.
And rightly so.
All right, 3 incidents. Just to remind you, we had the Mitoma handball and the disallowed goal.
Top of the chest.
Should have stood.
My opinion, yes.
We had the Welbeck shot, which came off of McAllister's arm.
I'm okay with it. I thought it was a handball. It might have hit the hip, but I thought it struck the hand, so I'm okay with that.
And that's under the interpretation that you can't score
exactly
with your arm and whatever. Obviously, you knew nothing about it.
I can get on board with that one.
Højbjerg on Mitoma.
Stonewall penalty.
100%.
1,000,000%.
I think it was another one with long leg pulling somebody back.
Pulling a shirt. Another penalty. I mean, honestly, I think Howard Webb's phoned up Brighton to apologise. I believe that's the 4th time they've had to apologise to Brighton this season. So if you go into a game and you play that well and you create those chances, you're going to be livid if you're De Zerbi and Brighton.
Yeah, 100%.
You're going to be
not a good day for VAR.
No, you're going to be
not a good performance from Spurs, I thought.
No, they're going to be fuming. Gab, there was an all-Italian clash on the sidelines between Stellini and De Zerbi, both managers getting sent off. What's the history?
I've heard different versions about this and different versions from the two camps. Some people said, De Zerbi was annoyed that Stellini praised Graham Potter and the work at Brighton and didn't praise De Zerbi enough. I don't think De Zerbi can be a bit persnickety, but right. I don't think De Zerbi's ego is such. So I genuinely don't know, but it happened before the game. During the game, I think Stellini realized, I'm just going to ignore him, which I think wound him up more. Stellini's staff, by the way, Stellini tried to ignore him, but had no compunction about his staff having a word the other
way. He was after it, wasn't he? De Zerbi, he was after it.
De Zerbi was angry. I think he let himself down here. It's the second time he's been sent off this season in the Premier League. And as he pointed out, it's not like it's something that's happened to him too many times.
Well, they're getting sent off not because they're having to go at the officials. It's not controlling the bench. It's not controlling your players or staff.
Yeah, and you're having a go at each other.
Yeah.
Which shouldn't be happening.
No.
Newcastle stay third with a win over Brentford as Nick Pope saves Ivan Toney's penalty. Don, did your boys get a little bit lucky here? Thomas Frank felt they did.
I wouldn't say lucky. I think when Eddie Howe talked after the Man United game, he said after the win they put a lot into it physically and mentally. Then they had to go to West Ham away. They beat them 5-1, but four goals were gifted. But they had to work hard. The scoreline wasn't a 5-1 win. And they stayed down. They didn't go back to the North East. So going to the G-Tech, I would have took a point before the game. I think if you asked Eddie Howe before the game, when it was four wins on the spin against a team that, in my opinion, is one of the best at home and being in your faces and aggressive and play really good football, I think you take a point. So to go away from that with a 2-1 win and five wins on the spin.
So fully deserved, not lucky this year.
Yes.
Okay.
To answer it in a short question, yes. Youssef Moukoko comes off the bench and gets a late winner for Dortmund against Union Berlin. Are they still in the hunt?
They're still very much in the hunt. They're 2 points back, and this is a really good performance. And honestly, they battered Union Berlin. They won a goal up, should have scored more. Daniel Malin's playing well. Gave up that goal, and in the past, you would have seen Borussia Dortmund crumble. Oh my goodness, we're coming, you know, two defeats in a row. We're going to drop points again. But no, they didn't. They kept knocking. Happy for Moukoko, too. I think this was his first goal since November, something like that. He gives them something different to Sebastian Haller when he comes on.
Yeah.
Well done, Dortmund. And you know, roll on the title race. Frank Lampard Jr. makes his debut on the Chelsea bench, but a superb goal from Wolves' Mateus Nunez means they lose again. Did you see anything different from
Nothing.
Chelsea?
Nothing different. I'm looking at a group of players now that are...
The same players. We saw Mudrick on the bench, Sterling,
yes.
4-3-3.
Well, Sterling...
No Conte.
No, well, Conte was a miss. You know, that's a worry for Frank Lampard. You had him to that midfielder, a different team. But Sterling never got a kick. Havertz is... just completely shot of any sort of confidence. Mudrick's a good young player. He's not 88 million quid. Leverkusen, I think, bid 30 for him in the summer. You're looking at a team that, when you write them all down on paper, they're a good team. I thought Fofana was easily man of the match, but I saw nothing different.
Oh, you've depressed them.
So both Milan clubs were held on Friday night, Gab, ahead of their Champions League clashes this week. Who looked the better, Inter or Milan?
Look, there's gnashing of teeth, pulling of hair. Oh, we're dropping points. Yes, it's important for the table. I'll give you that. I thought both teams created a ton of chances. What was different, Inter were beaten by an improbable worldie from former Inter player Candreva in the 90th minute.
Didn't mean it.
But they missed a million chances before that. Milan also, Empoli had zero shots at all in the game until like the 80th minute. They created chances. I'm okay with that heading into the Champions League. Cristiano Ronaldo's Al Nassr were held by Al Fateh 0-0, and they remain second in the Saudi Pro League. But Don, Cristiano was furious. He still gets wound up by the Messi chance, which opponents chuck at him during games.
Right.
And he clashed with an opponent that he accused of time-wasting. Are you surprised by either?
So educate me. So he's getting the Messi chance.
All right. So Messi's very popular in Saudi.
Banter.
As is Cristiano, right?
Yeah.
And they kind of figured out because...
How are you going to get under his skin? Mention Messi. Yeah,
exactly.
Deal with it.
And he's competitive and that annoys him, supposedly. But I think what it is more, what I liked here was it's 0-0. Their opposition's not very good. You know, it's like a 0.1 for Al Fateh. And this guy, I forget his name, but he's like taking his time, and Cristiano gets in his face and tells him, "Don't time waste." Okay. I like that. I like that. There's people who say,
"Well, you like it from Ronaldo, or you like the time wasting bit?"
No, I like it from Cristiano.
Why? Why are you getting involved for?
Because the guy's time wasting.
Yeah, but you can do anyone time wastes. You've got to win a game. You've got to do what you got to do.
But
Ronaldo's not the ref.
But equally, Cristiano, this shows to me that he's competitive.
Definitely.
That he's not just there to count the money to buy more gold toilets and gold plumbing. He's doing this because he cares about winning.
All pros do.
I don't know. I think there's some people who
mainly
take
that back. Most pros do.
Okay, thank you. So, well done, Cristiano. Most pros aren't as rich as Cristiano is.
Yeah. So Molina and Hermoso for Atletico Madrid, they get a big win to Vallecano, strengthen their grip on third place in La Liga. Your thoughts?
I think we saw how Atletico Madrid right now are really, really good. And I think they're going to rue how they screwed things up in the Champions League and whatever.
What's changed then?
Well, it's not just João Félix leaving. It's the fact, although I think it certainly helped Antoine Griezmann get even better. He's arguably been the best player in La Liga this season. They've managed to maintain their defensive intensity. Mm. He's finally found, I think, the right balance.
Has he found his mojo back?
He seems motivated. I don't think a new contract is out of the question for Diego Simeone.
I mean, like 6 months ago, 7 months ago, it's like, oh, he's gone, he's finished, this is his last season.
It all seemed done. But, you know, there's a real lift. They're playing really good football. You could argue they're playing some of the best football in La Liga. They got help in the battle, not that they needed, in the battle for fourth. Mm. Betis finished with 9 men, losing to Cadiz in another game. You know, other teams are self-destructing. They're going into trouble. Atletico look really, really good right now. Jesse Marsh is a bit of a tease, isn't he, Don? So obviously he coached Leeds earlier this season. Yeah. He was let go. He reportedly broke off negotiations with Leicester City, who remained second bottom after losing 1-0 to Bournemouth. And this is a sense of deja vu, because shortly after getting sacked from Leeds... Yeah. He was in negotiation with Southampton, and then they hired that weirdo, whose name escapes me right now, instead. But then he broke negotiations off with Southampton.
What does he want? What's he thinking?
I mean...
Is he even the answer? Jesse Marsh, the answer for Leicester?
Look, if there's a project, if it's a multi-year project, because if you take over a team...
Leicester can't. They can't. The Southamptons and the Leicesters, they're not projects. You got to firefight and get them out of bottom three.
No, they're projects in the sense that if we stay up, great. If we go down, what is the project going for?
Sure, have the conversation. But I think when you're going in for negotiations with teams in the bottom three, don't look about the long term.
What I don't get about this is this is also public, right? You should be able to, like, if you don't want to take those jobs, if you want to talk to them and stuff, look at things and then make a decision, that's fine. But it's not a good look for you that everything immediately becomes public when you break off negotations. Like, he must have an agent, somebody who looks after him, who knows how to handle these situations.
But how do you get the self-power to get sacked by Leeds, but then you can turn Southampton, fair enough, they're going to go down rock bottom, and Leicester down?
Leicester, second bottom.
Yeah, but you're too good for them.
Well,
I don't know where his bar is. I don't know if Jesse Marsh is going, what does he want? Does he want the Brighton job? Does he want the Spurs job? What's his bar?
I think Jesse Marsh is a good manager for a Princeton guy. And I think it makes sense that these clubs would have spoken to him.
I agree with that. But to turn them down? Turn Leicester down?
Well, because you don't want to... It depends on the guarantees they offer you. If you go there and you say, hey, look, Jesse, come here for 6 months, keep us up. That's not what Jesse wants to do. That's not what Jesse's football is about, right?
Hang on. Let me just say, come here for 6 months and keep us up, and we'll give you a couple of million quid in your back pocket.
I don't think the guy cares about
money.
A couple million quid
Fine.
In his back pocket. I think he wants to go to a club where he says, look, I'll do my best to keep you up. We'll probably go down. I think Southampton probably would have been a better fit for him than Leicester, just based on the types of players they have and the people running the club and the technical operation there. Mm. I get that. And he says, look, you know, a multi-year deal. Let's plan on going down. Hopefully we stay up. If we go down, what are we going to do?
I cannot imagine Jesse Marsh in the Championship.
Why?
It's one of the most brutal leagues out there. He's emotional.
Could you imagine Marcelo Bielsa in the Championship? That worked out pretty good.
No, I can imagine him in the Championship. I think he's experienced enough to deal with anything that comes his way.
I don't know.
A few bombs to some fans when it's going a little bit. It's kind of a little bit.
Bad. I don't know. I think it's a PR thing. This is not good PR. I don't blame Jesse. I blame the people around him who are advising him, because to develop the reputation, we in the media, we're so good at building narratives, right? Hmm. And if you build a narrative of, oh, this is the guy who gets sacked by Leeds, and then true story. And then negotiates and turns things down. There's ways to do that. There's ways to explore a job and a situation without the fact that you turn them down becoming front page news. That's back page news. That's all I'm saying. Because then a rep builds in people's minds. Football's a weird, incestuous world, and you get the wrong rep, and that doesn't help you. You know, you can go, you can talk to them, you can say no, not for me. in a way that tells a different narrative. And this is down
to how it gets leaked,
who's doing
it?
His PR.
It's funny how it gets leaked.
You'd almost think there's somebody looking to make him look bad. I don't know.
Yeah. A Palo de Bala penalty gives Roma an early lead away to Torino. They never look back as they won 1-0 gap. Jose Mourinho third in the table. Respect.
Respect!
Respect!
So, yeah, look, you can't argue with the results. They've got a big Europa League coming up in midweek. He made a bunch of changes, rested a bunch of players, so from Pellegrini to both Tammy and Belotti were out for this game. All right, it's all downhill. You get an early penalty. Torino, I don't think, are a great side, and then they just kind of manage it through. But there's a skill in that, too. And, look, Mourinho's not going to win points for style, even though sometimes he would like to. So then judging by results, this is an objectively good result to be third. Even if Juve gets a point back, you're still in the Champions League. It puts pressure on others. He's got the whole city behind, or the whole red and yellow half of the city behind him. You got the fans with him. I don't think there's anything more you can ask for. Now, if you avoid having little back and forth with retired ex-pros like Antonio Cassano who make fun of him, that might be good, but whatever. He likes that side of things,
too. It's a shock, isn't it? Cassano having an opinion on something.
Yeah, no. He says Mourinho's too cinematic. Whatever. The Premier League on Thursday will vote on whether or not to ban betting sponsors from the front of shirts. Don, do you have a view on this?
See, if you'd asked me 10 years ago, I probably would have said it's not the end of the world. I think we've moved on. I think life's very different now. I think there's an awful lot of people suffering. I probably think it's a good idea. I think we can try and keep irresponsible gamblers away from gambling by what you see visually. If you're constantly getting pumped out ideas with betting companies across shirts, advertisement boards, etc., I think it can, even if it just helps one person gab, I think it's a good thing.
So it's already happened in some other countries. I think... look, I'm fine if people want to bet on football. In the Premier League and in other countries too, in Europe, there's been a weird dynamic. Because if you look at the names of those sponsors, right, those aren't bookmakers that are readily available, you know, in this country.
Right.
They're almost all Chinese-based. And they exist because there's a ban in China on advertising these things.
Oh, right.
And so what's the easiest way to get around the ban? Hey, I'll pay $5 million to Premier League clubs since the games are broadcast in China, and you can see like 888 bet or sort of the weirdo one. Remember Man Bet, which sounds like
Newcastle had one or have one. I can't remember Newcastle sponsored.
It's not all about Newcastle all the time.
No, it's a betting company across the front.
But Man Bet, I thought was funny because it sounded like bookmaker for people who use Grindr or something. but it was just. I think they should investigate also because many of these brands, they're all owned and are funneled through the same people. If you don't need it, maybe you think about it. You can still have betting partnerships. Nobody's talking about making it illegal. But some of these, they exist for a reason, which is sort of circumvent in other countries' laws.
Yeah,
I think this is something to consider.
Yeah. The Mirror reports that the Premier League are considering a major shake-up after they sell their TV rights for the next title gap. What are they planning?
So this is something that leagues around the world always pretend like they're going to do.
Right.
Because they want broadcasters to put more money in. And it's something that might work in theory. Basically, the idea is the Premier League says, you know what? Instead of selling my television rights to Sky, NBC Sport in the UK, to NBC in the US, to wherever they sell them to around the world, how about I go and I produce the game for myself in-house, right? Mm. And I set up my own streaming service. And then instead of paying a subscription to the broadcasters, you just pay the subscription direct to me. And then we make money. It's an interesting one. They've always sought partners because they say, look, we're not a media company. But in the end, what we're seeing with streaming is, and because I think they felt that they could get more money from broadcasters, because broadcasters, they often sell you a whole package along with it. If it's a cable subscription or a satellite subscription, they sell you the dish and whatever, and they upsell you. But we're in an age now where so many people have cut the cord, and people are just buying streaming services just to watch game. I subscribe to something called Viaplay so that I could watch La Liga.
Yeah,
maybe maybe there's something in this. I think it would be a bold move. It would mean giving up guaranteed money because you're not going to have a guarantee. Yeah. It comes down to how many subscriptions you can sell. I think in the past, also due to concerns of piracy, whatever, people want money. I'll be really curious to see if they follow through on it. We've seen some leagues do it on a minor scale, usually abroad in certain countries, and it's worked okay. This would be a bold move if they do it. Christophe Gaultier was a Paris Saint-Germain manager. He was furious at Nice fans after they unfurled a banner insulting his mother, who is 83 years old. He came out and he said, and obviously he managed Nice previously, he said, "Oh, without me, you would have never had European football." I'm guessing you've heard horrendous. All sorts of insults during games.
Why insult someone's mother?
I think they. I don't know exactly what they said.
No, I know, but why cross that line? Why is there so much hatred?
If you get called an SOB, then you are insulting somebody's mother, right?
Yeah, I don't. Why? I don't get why you'd want to go in the stadium and unfurl banners about an 83-year-old lady.
Who nobody knows and is not in the public
exactly.
eye and
so
whatever.
She comes into it. If you want to have a little bit of Gaultier and you want to call him some names under the sun and unfurl a banner that he might not be happy with, but you don't cross the line, then I can maybe get on board with. But again, you're crossing the line into it.
Yeah. No, I 100% agree with you. I think with Gaultier too, which what's funny is, not funny, but unusual, is in that stadium, he was probably getting abuse from both sets of fans continuously. So, yeah, another long, hard season for him.
Reports in Barca say that Messi's camp is waiting for the club to make contact over a possible return to Barca as he signs a new deal with Paris Saint-Germain or goes off to Miami or Saudi Arabia. What makes sense? Where's he going?
None of this makes sense. This is so stupid. So we said it before. It would be really, really dumb unless Messi decides to play for free or something for him to return to Barcelona. You've got a football project. You've got books to balance. Enough of this nonsense. You want to rebuild bridges and relationships with him? Great. That's important because he's a huge part of Barcelona's history. But
what do you see him doing? Where does he go? Does he stay?
I have no idea. I'm just tired of people of this nonsense. With Barcelona, that people, it's almost like these people are children, that they keep pushing this as if, like, this is actually a really good option for the club.
Shirt sales, Malcolm, into it.
What shirt sales when you have to pay him? Like I said, unless he goes there and says, "I'm going to do this as an act of..."
But
you know what? He wasn't going to do it before. Why would he do it now?
Well,
right?
the way they let him go and the debacle and the... that was a shambles.
The Paris Saint-Germain, I said, I have doubts over how long the Qataris are going to fund this project. Miami, Saudi Arabia, I don't know. Everybody, his dad is going, we said this before, his dad's going around the world, talking to people, listening to them. And after they meet with his dad, I don't know if his dad's a very likable guy, but he, you know, they say, like, "Oh yeah, he's coming here," right? I've had people swear blind to me that he is committed to Inter Miami. I've had people swear blind to me that he's committed to Saudi Arabia.
That's good selling
from the
dad.
I've had people swear
then.
Blind to me.
That's good selling from
absolutely,
the dad.
Absolutely. That he's definitely going to re-up with
Great.
Paris Saint-Germain.
Good agency.
He's done any of these things. Like we said before, Lionel and Jorge, take your time. I think they know what they're doing. Take your time. See what's out there. My romantic choice, go back to Rosario, where it all began. Go and do that.
Who knew you romantic?
You know what would be even cooler? Sign for Al Nassr and play alongside Cristiano.
Aww.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
What a romantic you are. Never knew you had it in you.
Let's go back to Friday night and Napoli's 2-1 win at Lecce. Don, they weren't super impressive, and Gio Simeone picked up an injury. But Victor Osimhen could be back for the Champions League, and that's a game changer, right?
It's a massive game changer. That is a game changer in a half. They've not been the same without him the last couple of weeks. Sure, they sort of survived early on when Raspadori and Simeone were getting their goals, but he's a beast. He sets the tone, he closes people down. I think what I've seen in the last couple of games, especially in the defeat against Milan, is they didn't have that presence. Osimhen puts defenders under pressure. He sets the tone. The midfield players have him. And then you know about his ability. You know how good he is with his scoring goals, his heading ability. He's a hold-up player, how athletic he is. He's a massive game-changer for them.
And now he has his new mask after losing his old one.
Ah, yeah, right, yeah.
Custom-made mask.
They said it was a lucky mask.
It's more than luck, as I said before. It's like Tony Stark in Iron Man, right? He has no powers without his mask.
Exactly.
But put the mask on, and he becomes
Victor Osimhen. So what's he got to play with his mask for life?
I think he will. I mean,
come on.
I genuinely, look, he got injured like a year, like more like a year ago.
So we're going to say Osimhen playing with a mask till he's 35.
Like, I don't know for a fact, but I genuinely, he must have healed, right? I genuinely don't believe that he wears the mask because for a medical reason at this point. I mean, maybe I'm wrong.
I think that's the only reason, no?
No, I think he wears it because...
Well, he thinks he looks cool.
He does look cool with a mask.
Definitely.
He's playing the best football of his life. Footballers are superstitious. You know that, yeah. Right? You were telling me the point of the story about when you went on that winning streak with Everton and you didn't change your underpants for months.
2.5 years, never changed my underpants. Benfica lose only their second game of the season in all competitions on Friday night as they let slip a lead against Porto, Gab. Bad omen ahead of the game against Inter.
Let me take you back to the beginning of your statement. What month is it?
Now?
Yes.
April.
It's April.
Yeah.
It is April, and this is only their second defeat in all competitions, and they play in the Portuguese Cup, and they play in the Champions League, and amazing. They play in the Portuguese League. And did they lose Enzo Fernandez? Did they lose the most expensive player in the history of the Premier League, in the history of the wealthiest league in the world? I mean, this is unreal what's happening. I don't think it's a bad omen. I think they were a little bit lucky, I think, with the opening goal. They got caught. Taremi putting Porto ahead. Porto played well. At some point, another defeat was going to come. But look, there's no question they were looking ahead to Inter on Tuesday. I'm going to Lisbon, by the way. I will be at that game. I will report back to see how they look. I don't think it's an omen. I don't think it plays with their minds. I think they're so well-drilled at this stage that I don't think it's going to affect
them. Who'd you fancy?
I mean, the way Inter have been finishing, but Inter were, I thought, really fortunate to get past Porto. Mm-hmm. So, logic says Benfica. That said, you know, everybody's so down on Inter about the finishing. Yeah, I'm an expected goals guy. I worry when you don't create chances. I think Inter have a shot. But yeah, I think it's 55 or 60% Benfica at this stage. Back to Bayern, Joshua Kimmich has apologized to Freiburg fans for what he called an, quote, unsportsmanlike celebration in their victory Saturday. Don, where do you stand more generally on this about your player, you scored a goal, you're celebrating. Should you just ignore the opposing fans? Do you have a responsibility?
Listen, if you're getting a little bit of abuse or a bit of stick, there's no harm in giving a little bit back. As long as you don't overstep the mark. I don't think that's what I saw when Kimmich made the gesture.
Would a Newcastle fan scoring for Sunderland against Newcastle...
I can't think of who you mean here, Gab.
Tell us the story.
I'll tell you the story. So I'm obviously a massive Newcastle fan. I've been on the Gallagher end, stood on the Gallagher end all my teenage years. All my family are black and white. Massive Newcastle fan. I signed for Sunderland.
Taking the coin from Sunderland? Okay.
Yeah. But I went back home, live in Durham, which is a stunning place. So we go to St James's Park, hostile atmosphere, loads riding on the game. I know how much it means to both sets of fans, but I'm a pro. I'm now a Sunderland fan because I play for them, so I want my team to do well. Gary Speed scores for Newcastle, they take the lead, and I scored an unbelievable left foot volley into the stanchion. My first thought was, I'm getting so much stick. Where's the Sunderland badge? Right in front of the Leasers end. So I give them it. 5 minutes later, went to take a corner, coin off the top of the head. Fully deserved.
Fully deserved.
Fully deserved.
So you provoked the Newcastle fans.
No, I'm joking.
That's what you're saying. You deserve the coin.
Yeah, but joking aside, we don't advocate coins off the head. But, you know, if I'm man enough to kiss the Sunderland badge at St James's Park, being a Newcastle fan, I've got to be man enough to take what's coming my way.
All right, and you never apologise like Joshua Kimmich. Are you going to apologise to Newcastle fans now?
No!
All right.
No, I was Sunderland player, Sunderland fan at the time. All's good in love and war. All's fair in love and war. So Wrexham play not to count. I can't wait for this game. Both on 100 points. It's going to be amazing. But it's cost Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney a lot of money.
So, look... So the Wrexham's accounts have come out, and some people have calculated that they've put in close to 10 million to be in. Now, that's how much they put in. Now, what these calculations don't calculate is how much are they getting out in terms of, obviously, their own personal publicity for themselves.
Yeah.
Also, I believe they also made a reality TV show, which is on some streaming network, I believe Disney Plus.
Might have sold it for 11 million.
Yeah, you know, maybe they're getting some money off that, too. So, look, I think it's a nice story. I think what you are seeing is that, you know, along with the fairy tale, there's been serious investment. And I'm okay with that. Yeah. I'm okay with that if people are committed to it. You know, when When they first did this, I said, I hope they're not just doing this for publicity and they're serious about this. Yeah. I think they've shown that they are serious about it. Do they get an economic return? Yes. Are they still losing money on it? I don't know. Mm. But that's okay.
Yeah.
Because I think they've done
something. They're okay with it. Happy days.
Exactly. I'm all right with that. Don,
amazing.
This brings us to an end. So thank you for filling, I wanted to say filling Jules' big shoes, but he's got little teeny tiny feet.
Yeah, tiny shoes.
We're going to be back on Thursday and look back at some Champions League action. That's right, quarterfinal stage. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.